Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. In the past few days, I'm sure you've been asked, what's your New Year's resolution? And as hopeful and inspiring as these conversations might seem, the reality is that the average New Year's resolution lasts less than 4 months. The first Friday in January is known as Quitter's Day, the date when many people are likely to abandon their New Year's resolutions. But why are resolutions so likely to fail? We're learning more about motivation, self-regulation, and decision-making with Ohio State University psychology professor, Dr. Kenjiro Fujita, and he is joining us now. Welcome to All Sides, Ken.
Thank you. Really pleased to be here.
So your research explores why people make choices that undermine their long-term goals, despite the intelligent beings that we are. So why are most of us so bad at following through?
I think a lot of times when we set our goals, we set big goals, right? Big picture goals. And so in order to do so, we kind of expand our perspective and we have a big picture perspective on our lives. But that's not how we live our daily lives. We live our daily lives zoomed in. We're worried about taking the kids to school on time and getting to work, fighting traffic, making sure the food's on the table. So we kind of lose sight of our big goals when we're zoomed in on our daily, trying to put out the fires and getting our to-do list done. And there's a disconnect between what we do in our daily lives and the goals that we want to pursue. And that's a primary reason why people fail.
We were talking before the show started about how you study goals, but we're talking about New Year's resolutions because it's January. Do you think, is a New Year's resolution and a goal the same thing, really?
I think they're largely the same. I think what's really special about New Year's resolutions is that we often have the holiday to think about what we really want from our lives. So we tend to set these really big goals. I want to be healthier. I want to be less stressed. I want to be more forgiving. I want to be a better parent, et cetera, et cetera. These are the exact kind of goals that people will struggle to accomplish unless they connect these big goals to their daily lives. So I think they're particularly apt for failure because of the fact that they're so big and they're so abstract, and we don't take the time to create the plans necessary to fulfill them when daily life hits at the start of the new year.
So let's talk about that. So you're saying that the big goal, this overarching goal, is the problem. But if you pick a littler goal or a more direct goal, is that how we're going to make it?
Well, there's two ways to do this, right? So you can either, as you say, set more concrete and specific goals that might be easy to track in daily life, or we have to find ways to see the big goals in our daily life. So if, for example, of the latter, if we want to say, I want to live more mindfully, you have to understand that when you're in the grind of daily life, you have to take the time to live mindfully. You have to see mindfulness in the activities that you're doing. So it's one of two ways. You either need to make take the abstract and make it more concrete, or find the abstract in the concrete. But the most important thing is finding a connection between the two.
So could it be as specific as, rather than setting a resolution or a goal that says, I want to be healthier in 2026, you need to set more of a goal like, I'm going to eat a salad 5 days a week for lunch.
Absolutely. And research suggests that those kinds of detailed plans really do promote goal success. The risk here is that there's a trade-off. The more concrete we get, the less meaningful and purposeful the goals can seem. So when you're eating that salad 5 times every day, you might lose sight of the fact that it's for this broader goal of being healthier or for being, you know, living a happier, more fulfilling life. So one of the things, it's an interesting trade-off. We want to be concrete enough to be able to pursue and implement the goal, but we also want it to be abstract enough to provide us purpose and meaning. And finding a balance between those two can be really tricky.
When we want to break a bad habit, we know the risks. You know, if, for example, of smoking, or if you eat unhealthy, you know you're not supposed to smoke, you know you're not supposed to eat unhealthy. But why is it so difficult to break the bad habit?
Again, I think it has to do with this disconnect between what happens in the moment versus what happens when we have the time and space to think about what we really want. So when, you know, when we're setting our New Year's resolutions, when we're thinking about the habits that we want to create, we're not thinking about the pressures, the demands of everyday life. And so it's really easy to say, hey, I want to do X, Y, Z. But when you're in the moment, again, we're sort of zoomed in, we can often become blind to those broader arching goals, right? So if, for example, we say, I want to eat healthier, you know, that makes sense when I'm not hungry. But when I'm hungry, what happens? Your mind tends to fill with the kinds of thoughts that you tend to have on everyday life. And so breaking that can be very difficult. Being able to see the goal despite all of those thoughts and tendencies that you have, I think, is the real secret to self-control.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about New Year's resolutions, how to keep them, why they fail, with Ohio State University psychology professor Dr. Ken Fujita. And listeners, if you'd like to join us, you can tell us your New Year's resolution success story. How did you actually do it? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or send us an email at allsides@wosu.org. Again, that's 614-292-8513 if you want to join our conversation about New Year's resolutions. So can you give me an example of a resolution that you would make? I mean, do you make New Year's resolutions?
I have in the past, for sure.
Okay. So give me an example of one that would be more attainable, rather than saying, I have a New Year's resolution to be healthier in 2026.
Well, if you say, I want to be healthier, right? Mm-hmm. That's very abstract. And there are many ways you could pursue that. I think a more specific goal would be one that takes one of those instances and makes it your own. So, for example, to be healthier, you might focus on the food domain, or you might focus on the exercise domain, or you might focus on the mental health domain. Becoming more concrete within each of those, I think, is a step in the right direction. If you went with exercise, for example, you would want to create a goal that you can monitor your progress on. So you want something that is fairly specific, something that is ambitious but attainable. You also want to make sure the goal is something that is important to you, that it's relevant to you, and that there's a time bound so that you can say, by this time, I want to be this far. The ability to monitor your progress on a goal is really important, because if you can't monitor your progress, you don't know how well you're doing. And usually, if you don't know how well you're doing, you're not doing very well at all. Mm-hmm. So you really want to create goals for which there are distinct markers where you can say, okay, I'm on track. And if I'm not on track, I need to work harder. I need to make adjustments. I need to change how I'm doing things. So just to give you an example, you know, if, for example, you had a weight loss goal, you might want to say, I want to lose, you know, a pound a week. Then at the end of every week, you want to make sure that you have a weigh-in, that you're tracking your progress, and then you have a reevaluation. If you're not doing as well as you were hoping to do, what adjustments could you make? What additional supports could you get to help you with your goal? If you were ahead of your goal, does that mean you want to keep racing ahead, or do you want to slow down to get back on pace? I think this is the importance of monitoring and checking in. Mm. Now, what I will say is, I think we need to understand that this requires a lot of knowledge. So if you set an impossible goal, like I want to lose 20 pounds a week, you know, no matter how much you monitor, no matter how much you work, you know, that's going to be a real problem. So part of goal pursuit is having the requisite knowledge to be able to achieve the goals. And it's a learning process. I don't think we should assume that just because we have good intentions and because we have lots of willpower that we'll achieve our goals. Achieving goals requires doing some research, looking into things, understanding what it takes to get those goals. It also takes a willingness to practice and fail, again, because not everyone's an expert. Most people are not. And so I think you have to be willing to try things. What works for one person may not work for another. And so you need to find out what works for you. So in addition to doing more research on the goal itself, part of goal pursuit is learning about yourself. It's about self-growth and self-discovery, learning what works for you and what doesn't. Hmm.
What do you think about the influence of social media on people's goals and motivations? Is it good for motivation, or does it cause more unrealistic goals?
So social media is not my expertise, but you know, like any other social influence, I think it probably goes both ways, right? So social media can serve to inspire us and to introduce us to potential role models and people who we aspire to be like. On the other hand, social influences like social media could also lead us to be to pursue goals that might not actually be good for us, or goals that are that we might not want, but because of their presence, we think that we should or we want to pursue them. So I think it goes both ways. And again, I think that's part of why we have to understand goal pursuit as a learning process. You have to understand what your goals are, who is going to be useful, who's going to be helpful, and who's not. And I think, again, social media for some will be incredibly inspiring, and for some it'll be really detrimental.
Why can't most people stick with the goal through even January?
I mean, behavior change is really hard. I mean, we tend to think of it as trivial. But, you know, as a researcher, I can tell you that there are a number of steps and a number of pitfalls that you can fall prey to. So we've talked a little bit about goal setting, setting the right goal, and that already sounds pretty complicated, right? Because it has to be, has to be concrete, but not too concrete. Has to be abstract, but not too abstract. We haven't even started to talk about some of the challenges of resisting temptation, creating effective plans, evaluating whether you should continue or quit. So I think for me, the lesson when it comes to pursuing your goals is to be compassionate with yourself. It is a really complicated process. It does take a lot of skill and knowledge. And so if you are pursuing this journey, you should have patience and you should have compassion and you should be ready to fail and learn.
Okay, so those things that you just said we haven't talked about yet. So tell me about one of them. It's a way to help you keep your goal.
Sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So all behavior change requires self-control, right? Yeah. So we are always going to, we have these new habits that we want, but we also have these bad habits that we're used to. And there's always going to be the temptation to fall back on those bad habits for multiple reasons. One, they tend to be things that we like. Two, they tend to be the things that are easier. Our world is structured. We've structured our lives in the past to fulfill us with these particular bad to serve these bad habits. And so it's a lot easier to maintain them than to try to change them. So, I think... You know, a lot of people think when they think about self-control, it's all about good intentions and willpower. I just need to grit my teeth and I can tough my way through it. Research suggests that that might not actually be the best strategy, that there are other tricks that we can use to kind of hack our way to make goal pursuit easier, smarter, rather than trying to make it harder and tougher.
Like what?
That's a really good question.
One
that seems to make sense to everyone, but is something that we often don't follow through on, is to make sure the opportunities for those bad habits never pop up in the first place. So, for example, if you smoke every time you go to the bar and you want to quit smoking, one easy way is to not go to the bar. Mm. Another way is to make sure that you don't have cigarettes in the house. Mm. Another one might be to potentially... find new pursuits where cigarette smoking might get in the way. So, for example, some kind of sport or some place where smoking is not permitted or detrimental. Those are behavioral strategies you can take. In my lab, we emphasize cognitive reframing strategies. So if you wake up in the morning, for example, and you're like, wow, I really don't, despite the intention the night before to go work out at the first thing in the morning, I really don't feel like doing it. That's one way to think about it. I have to go work out. You can cognitively reframe it in a way that taps into your other motivations. So, for example, I need to do this because this is me becoming the better me. This is about me becoming healthier. It's about me becoming an example for my kids. This is about me, whatever other motivations that you might have. So instead of sort of identifying the activity as the activity itself, linking it to these broader goals is one way that we can bring the abstract into the concrete in our daily lives. And the research that my lab's done has shown that actually helps people overcome these temptations.
What about the idea of wanting fast results? You know, everyone wants everything fast now. Fast videos, fast reads, fast food. What if we don't see the results fast and then that makes us want to quit?
I think that's a really important insight. I think anybody who wants to pursue behavior change or pursue a goal or New Year's resolution has to understand that it's a marathon, not a sprint. Mm-hmm. And one of the things, if you're thinking about the metaphor of a marathon, is that you have to really think about sustainability, right? So we know from motivation science that motivation is strongest at the beginning and end of the goal. This is because at the beginning, you have lots of hope and you're really excited, mm-hmm. which is probably why, you know, gym membership spikes in the first week of January. But as you get in the as you get towards the end of the goal, you can see the finish line in sight. And so we tend to speed up and get faster and faster and work harder and harder towards the goal. Mm-hmm. So motivation tends to be high in the beginning and the end of goal pursuit. The problem is we all get stuck in the middle. Mm-hmm. In the middle, we no longer have the hope and optimism that we had in the beginning. No, but we still also can't see the finish line. And so when motivation flags, that's when we have to engage in other tricks to try to raise our motivations or find new sources of motivation to push through to the end.
Give me a motivation trick.
As I mentioned, one motivational tactic is to reframe what you're doing in terms of the goal so that mm-hmm. so you remember the reason why you started it in the first place. Another tactic that people use is what's known as temptation bundling. So rather than trying to be abstinent through the entire course of goal pursuit, you might allow yourself small little indulgences that are harmless. And in particular, you might tie those indulgences to active goal pursuit. So for example, if you had the goal to exercise more, as well as to not use social media as much, you might allow yourself to use social media when you are exercising. So in other words, you are rewarding yourself for pursuing the one goal, but you're also ensuring that indulgence is limited and is always tied to something that's beneficial as opposed to just indulging without that kind of conditional. So something like that can often also help. A lot of diets will include cheat days that you reward yourself after a certain time of abstinence. So I allow myself to cheat and it helps me maintain my motivation and my energy. So these are a couple of strategies that you might use.
Before we run out of time with you, I wanted to take a call from Madeline. Madeline in Columbus, what was your comment?
Oh, my comment was that I did do a diet and it's been amazing and it's been slow, as the speaker has said. And I do take cheat days. I had ice cream yesterday. But I'm just amazed that I've been able to do it. I'm not huge, but I did want to lose some weight. I asked my doctor, she had lost a bunch of weight. And I said, what'd you do? And she said, one yogurt in the morning, an apple for lunch, and salad for dinner. And it's not been, it really doesn't make me so hungry. And I've lost 10, 12 pounds. It's pretty cool, over 9 months. Mm. So in line with what your speaker is saying, it does take time. I do take a cheat day. But the diets are simple. That, to me, is what I think is the key.
Okay, thank you. So she talked both about it being simple, but then it took 9 months. So tell me about that, the simple and the length.
Well, as I mentioned with the length part, finding something that works for you and that you can sustain over time is really important. Because behavior change, again, it's not a one-time thing. The whole point of behavior change is that you are changing. And so you want to make sure it's something that you can do over the long term. As for simple, I think simple works for a lot of people, but it might not work for everyone. So for some people, keeping a routine, keeping a structured sort of, a habit or developing a habit or developing a particular routine is the secret to goal pursuit. For others, though, for example, for those who require more variety in their lives, this might be more difficult. Mm-hmm. And this goes back to a point I made earlier, is that part of goal pursuit is not just learning what works for other people, but critically, whether or not it works for you. And if it doesn't work for you, you don't have to throw up your hands and give up. You just have to find other strategies or other approaches that might work more effectively for you.
We've been talking about New Year's resolutions with Ohio State University psychology professor, Dr. Kentaro Fujita. Thank you so much for your time today, Ken.
It's been a real pleasure. Thanks so much.
Listeners, you can still join us to tell us your New Year's resolution success story. How did you actually do it? 614-292-8513 or email allsides@wosu.org. Coming up, we're going to dive more deeply into those health-related New Year's resolutions when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. The most popular New Year's resolutions center on health, such as more exercise, eating better, and weight loss. But they're also the ones that are most known to fail. It's a running joke that gyms are always packed in January, but by February or March, slowly the crowds have lessened. But health goals are important, and there are ways to make them stick. We're going to learn more about successful health goals with dietitian and nutrition therapist Alyssa Rumsey. Welcome to All Sides, Alyssa.
Thank you so much for having me.
So what do you hear the most at this time of year from clients you work with? What are they hoping for with their New Year's resolutions?
I think a lot of people are coming into the year with a lot of good intentions. And as you mentioned, exercise, eating better is at the top of the list for a lot of people. And they're usually hoping for weight loss associated with those changes.
So of goals that people set, which ones are actually achievable? Is it whenever they say, I want to lose 20 pounds, or is it when they say I want to exercise more?
So I think a couple of things. Mm-hmm. Most people manage to not follow through on their resolutions. And a lot of people have guilt and shame about this. And they think like, well, it's a problem with me. I didn't have willpower. And in reality, I think that has way less to do with willpower and way more to do with resolutions either being much too restrictive or too ambitious, not attainable, or not specific. So like exercise more, for example, is very broad. And if you're someone who's not exercising at all, and then you have this goal to exercise more, or you say, okay, I'm gonna exercise 4 or 5 days a week, that's gonna be something that might be doable at the beginning, but is really setting you up to burn out and not be sustainable.
Well, how do you assess a health goal as being realistic? What do you tell people whenever they want to set a health goal? What is realistic? I know it probably varies person to person.
Yeah, I mean, something that I talk with my clients about is when they come up with a goal, I say, you know, really trying to get it as specific as possible and also knowing the why behind it. So if we keep going with this exercise more goal, what's the why behind that? A lot of people might have weight loss as underneath that goal to exercise more. But what I find is that if weight loss is the primary thing you're focused on, if you're not seeing the number on the scale budge, like even if you have started to make some positive behavior changes with exercise and movement, a lot of people get really frustrated. So I like to bring it back to, you know, maybe in addition to weight loss or not just weight loss, what are some other things that you hope might happen with exercising more? Maybe it's you have more stamina to play with your kids or your grandkids. Maybe you can go up the stairs easier. Maybe it's that you're more flexible or that you have less back pain or knee pain, right? Like what are some more specific things that you want to see? And then this can help you really start to make more changes towards this goal. So I'd say first, having those more specific reasons why, getting more clear on those, and then being really like, okay, what are barriers to me exercising more? Mm-hmm. Thinking about what are the challenges that might come up? If you've tried this in the past, what has happened? And then thinking about, okay, well, how can I maybe think about some of these barriers ahead of time? And, you know, plan it in. Maybe it's like, okay, I tried to do 5 days a week exercise in the past, and that just completely burnt me out. I couldn't do it. So I said, you know, well, okay, I'm just going to not do this at all. So let's start small. What about 1 day a week, 2 days a week, 30 minutes? It doesn't have to be this all or nothing sort of thing.
Talk to me about the idea of it being a New Year's resolution, this whole new year, new me situation that everyone seems to find themselves attracted to, but then does that set you up for failure? Because, I mean, we talk about that most New Year's resolutions, people don't keep them for more than a month or two. So why do New Year's resolutions exist if they don't work?
That is a very good question. I think a lot of people have been recognizing this in themselves. And I think it's very natural for, well, you know, time is a construct in a lot of ways. Mm. Like, you know, there's not much difference between December 31st and January 1st, but mentally there is this kind of thought of like coming out of the holiday, starting a quote unquote new year, and there can be a lot of energy behind that. And so I get, you know, where people are looking like, okay, how can I make some positive shifts in my lifestyle? But also, I think a lot of people are really recognizing that it's not so helpful for them to think like that. And so I have a lot of clients who, you know, might have some more energy this type of year, but this time of year, but they're thinking more of, okay, what feels good to me? Like, do I want to keep on keeping on with what I've been working on or doing? Like, is this the time to make a big shift? Some people find the idea of like intentions rather than these big sweeping goals or changes to be more manageable. I'm hearing from a lot of people in the last couple of years about like a word of the year, like a word or a phrase that they're just really keeping in mind of like, okay, like someone I was talking to recently was saying play was going to be their word of the year. They're like, I want to invite more of this into my life in 2026. So I think we can kind of reconceptualize what a New Year's resolution even has to mean. And that can be very individual.
Since we're talking about the health related goals with you, I wanted to talk about the rise of GLP-1 medications. Has that changed New Year's resolutions? You're not necessarily maybe joining a gym or Noom or Weight Watchers, but do you make a resolution to talk to your doctor about starting a medication? How does that change a resolution for people?
Yeah, I think it can potentially change. Certainly for some people who are on those medications, they might, if they're feeling at a good, stable place, they might not feel as much of that urge to make a big sweeping change or resolution. You know, I think for other people, it might be something that they're considering talking to their doctor or talking to their dietitian about if that is a good option for them. So I think it can certainly be part of the health conversation, and having those conversations can be part of this if, you know, a healthier lifestyle is something that you're looking to engage in 2026, that can be part of the conversation.
Yeah, I wonder about though, like, is it a New Year's resolution if you're trying to make a healthier choice by getting a medication to help you? Like, is that a resolution or that's just like a health plan?
I guess it probably depends on the person and what that feels like for you. You know, I think it's again going back to, you know, what can I do to help support my goals or the lifestyle changes that I want to make? And I'm thinking too, you know, for people struggling with mental health, like anxiety or depression, like going on a medication might really support their goal of getting a better handle on their mental health in 2026. And so the same might be true for a GLP-1 in terms of helping people with their health goal. It might also be the opposite. Like a lot of people are finding that they want to kind of do it without a GLP-1 or they've had a negative experience with it. So I think either way, it can be something that can support your overall goal of, you know, how do you want to feel? And that can be physically, that can be mentally, that can be emotionally. And then, okay, what are the different things that we can do to help support with that goal?
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about health-related New Year's resolutions with dietitian and nutrition therapist Alyssa Rumsey. Listeners, if you'd like to join us, you can tell us your New Year's resolution success story. How did you actually do it? Call us at 614-292-8513. 614-292-8513 or email allsides@wosu.org. We did have a caller earlier before you came on, Alyssa, who was saying that she lost, I think she said 12 pounds over 9 months. And so it was slow but steady. And she did it by having, I think she said, an apple for breakfast, yogurt for lunch, and a salad for dinner most days, but not every day. So what do you think of that? The idea of something steady, but it taking 9 months, like slow and steady.
I think slow and steady is the way to go, whether we're talking about food changes or any other kind of health goal. You know, we live in a culture and a society that's very much about quick fixes, which as a human, I completely understand, like wanting the change to happen fast. But in reality, most things do take time. And I really try to talk to people about, okay, can you focus on the process rather than the outcome? Because the outcome that you're looking for might be taking longer. So I think trying to start with small, simple changes, like it doesn't have to be this big sweeping, you know, completely overhauling your diet. For a lot of people, it can help to think about, you know, what can I add to support if you have a resolution around eating healthier, for example. What can I add rather than what can I take away? A lot of people start with what can I take away, and that restriction piece is really unsustainable for a lot of people. And that's, again, not a willpower issue. That's actually biologically how we are wired to fight against any kind of restriction. So instead, it might look like, okay, what can I add to my diet? You know, I'm not eating as many vegetables as I'd like. What can I add? Can I peruse some recipe books and try one new vegetable recipe a week, right? Like something like that, and really focusing on that process. And the outcome will come over time.
There's a lot of people who are trying to dismantle weight stigma, fat phobia, the body liberation movement. What are some red flags with people's goals where they might be missing the point of like being healthy but also being content in your body? How do we make those both things true?
I love that question. Yes, absolutely. There's certainly a lot of weight stigma in our culture and our society. And so I think it makes a lot of sense why people have weight loss goals, because for a lot of ways, things are easier for people that have smaller bodies in our culture, which is not right and it's not fair, but I understand why people have those weight loss goals. I think where I see a big issue is when the pursuit of weight loss or maintaining a certain weight causes a really big disconnection between you and your body. So when you are overriding hunger signals or fullness signals, or you are just spending so much time thinking about food and your body, I think that's where we really look at, like, okay, is this really a healthy change? And so really what I try to do with my clients is, you know, acknowledge and validate if they do have a desire for weight loss, but then also talk about, like, how do you want to feel in your body? What would your day be like if you weren't thinking as much about food, or if you were really in tune with your body cues and more connected to your body? Like, how would that feel? And can we work towards those things? Or as I was saying before, you know, kind of what's underneath that goal for weight loss or desire for weight loss? Is it more flexibility, going up and down stairs easier? Because we can do that in other ways without just focusing on the number on the scale.
You wrote a book called Unapologetic Eating, where you talk about a lot of the flaws in diet culture. So, what do you do at this time of year when people say, my New Year's resolution is to go on X diet, whatever name?
Again, I completely understand where people come with those goals and those ideas. Usually I ask them, just I try to get curious and get more information of, you know, oh, like, what are you hoping will happen if you do this diet? What diets have you tried in the past, and what happened? Like, how did that go? Often to that question, a lot of people will say some version of, you know, it worked really well for a short period of time, but then I just couldn't stay on it. I fell off the wagon, gained all the weight back, or, you know, started really just like binge eating, like swung the complete opposite way on the pendulum. And this is that biological response to restriction that I mentioned before. And a lot of people have shame of, like, oh, it was my fault. Like, I couldn't stick to the diet. And I always say, like, no, it's the diet's fault. Like, your body is doing what it was biologically wired to do, because we're all wired from, you know, thousands and thousands of years ago when food was really scarce. And so, you know, I really just try to get curious about their experience with diets, what's happened in the past, their experiences in their body, their experiences with food. And then, you know, really trying to see, like, okay, is this still something you want to pursue? And it might be. Or is there a way that we can do this that helps you really live in a more connected and attuned space in your body and with food?
What about people who feel that it's all their fault? They have no self-control. They can't stick to it. That tends to, for me, that is just, I feel like, why can't I do it? Other people do. Where is my the self-control gene in my brain, and where did it go?
So first of all, something that helps a lot of people is just even knowing that So a lot of times we think like, oh, I have to be hard on myself to make a change, right? I have to like really be hard on myself. If I'm nice to myself, nothing will change. And actually we see the exact opposite, certainly in the research, also anecdotally, I can say with my clients, when people have more compassion for themselves and are able to be more flexible and compassionate and gentle, that's actually where we see the most change, whether in that we see that in the research with all sorts of things, but certainly with people with higher self-compassion skills have a better diet quality. They are more active, better health outcomes overall, lower rates of anxiety and depression. So, you know, usually what I say there is like, okay, how can we zoom out a little bit, right? You're feeling like, oh, something is wrong with me. And instead really start to understand like, no, this makes so much sense, right? Your body is biologically wired to, if you cut things out or restrict, your body is biologically wired to increase your appetite, to increase your cravings. And so your body is actually doing what it was designed to do. And so having some self-compassion of like, oh, this makes so much sense that I wasn't able to do this. Or even looking at, you know, I work with a lot of people who have like very busy lives, work lives, family lives, and they have these changes they want to make. And then when we really sit down and they're having a lot of shame that they haven't been able to make these changes, and we really sit down, they have literally no time during the day for themselves. And I'm just sitting there like, wow, you have a really busy day. No wonder you haven't been able to make this change you're trying to make. There's no capacity there. So how can we start to make some space to increase that capacity?
We have been talking about health-related New Year's resolutions with dietitian and nutrition therapist Alyssa Rumsey. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Listeners, if you'd like to join us and tell us your New Year's resolution success story, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Coming up, we're going to talk about financial New Year's resolutions. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Americans want to save more, pay down debt, and build better money habits. Yet confidence in follow-through is shaky at best. Those are some of the words from an article written by Jack Caporal. He has written the piece, These Are the Top Financial New Year's Resolutions for 2026, and he's the research director for The Motley Fool, an investing and financial advice company. Welcome to All Sides, Jack.
Thanks for having me, Amy.
So the article you wrote is based off a survey of 2,000 adults from November of 2025, and it showed that 25% of those adults have debt to pay off as their top priority. So what does that tell you about what people are going to do for their financial New Year's resolutions? Will they pay off the debt?
Well, that was definitely the number one financial resolution for 2026, followed by saving for a major life milestone. The takeaway for me there is that Americans aren't setting, you know, dream goals for 2026. They're setting kind of stability goals. And I think that's reflected in a lot of the economic data that we're seeing around consumer sentiment and inflation and the labor market. Whether or not they'll be able to keep those resolutions is certainly an open question. Just as we're getting into the new year, we do ask if folks were able to keep their resolutions last year. Just 27% of them did. And heading into the new year, only 43% of our survey respondents said they think they'll be able to stick to their resolutions. So there's a good deal of doubt about their financial capabilities heading into 2026.
You also found that 30% said they want to set aside some money for a vacation or for travel. Does that surprise you? I mean, that seems like that's a luxury. I don't know if 30% is a big number or a small number for people who want to set aside money for travel.
It's surprisingly, honestly, low in my opinion, just because, you know, when we think about savings, traditionally saving for that vacation, that trip abroad, going to see family, whatever it is usually what comes to mind first. But I think that, again, is a reflection of some additional data just about the American consumer. Less than half have $400 on hand to handle that level of an expense just from their savings account alone. So people definitely want to bolster their savings account to handle an emergency versus doing something like travel. And also data from the Federal Reserve found that only 55% of consumers can cover 3 months of expenses from their savings account. And the rule of thumb is that you should have between 3 to 6 months of emergency expenses in your savings account in case you have something like a medical emergency or you lose your job. So the fact that less than half view saving for a vacation as their primary savings goal is surprisingly low, I think, just in a vacuum. But when you put it in the context of other data around how much savings Americans actually have, it makes sense that the majority of folks are more focused on boosting their emergency savings or saving for something that's a little bit more concrete and can make more of an immediate impact versus that vacation.
And what are you seeing when it comes to people saying they want to prioritize in the new year saving for, what did you call it, a life milestone? Does that mean like saving for buying a house or something like that?
Yeah, like saving for buying a house, saving for a wedding, saving for a new car. What we see there is that younger Americans are more focused on saving for a home or saving for a wedding, which makes sense just given where they are in life. Mm-hmm. Whereas folks in Gen X, baby boomers, they're less focused on saving for a home or a home renovation or a wedding, obviously. And they're much more interested in saving for retirement because that clock is ticking more for them.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about financial New Year's resolutions with research director for The Motley Fool and The Motley Fool Money, Jack Caporal. Caporal. I'm sorry, Jack. Jack Caporal. So whenever you talk about setting a New Year's resolution for finances, because we just spent the previous segment of this show talking about how hard it is to set a health New Year's resolution, which arguably, I would be more in your control. But setting a resolution for finances, there's a lot that's out of your control. You know, things happen that cost money. What your salary is what your salary is. So what are you finding when people try to set a New Year's resolution? Finances seems harder to me than even a health one.
Similar to health, I think a lot of finance is actually behavioral and is based on building strong, sustainable habits that you don't necessarily need to think about on a daily basis. So the top reasons why most of our survey respondents said that they are not optimistic about their financial resolutions is that they'll be too expensive to keep. So they're worried about inflation. They're worried about the cost of keeping their financial resolutions. And they'll have a hard time maintaining the habits necessary to hit their financial goals. And so what I think that shows or suggests is that they overestimate the amount of discipline that could be required to keep a financial resolution. They underestimate the amount of friction they might run into. So that's like the unexpected expense or potentially losing a job. And there's also a concern that people design goals that require kind of constant motivation or always checking in or taking action instead of building stable systems, essentially, mm-hmm. that can nurture almost automatically their finances. So my recommendations for folks who have a financial resolution for 2026 is take your goal from the abstract, I want to save more or I want to get out of debt, and make it concrete. I want to save X amount of money in the next 6 months. I want to reduce my debt by X amount in the next 9 months. Give yourself some grace in terms of visibility. So like you don't need to see progress over 2 weeks, you know, maybe check in after 3 months, and try and automate as much as possible. So that might mean setting up an automated deposit of just, you know, a small amount of money that you know is manageable into a savings account, upping your automated student loan debt payoff by what you know is a manageable amount just to start. So you have that automatic system that then you can check in on in a few months, see where your finances are, and, you know, increase or decrease or play with it however you want that makes sense, so you can more easily hit your goals.
What are some of the main flaws you see whenever people are looking at their financial New Year's resolutions? Is it that they set too big of a goal where they say, I want to save more money, but they don't realistically make it like $100 a month?
Right. So there is that balance between setting something that's really aspirational and setting something really realistic. You want to kind of shoot for the stars and potentially set yourself up for disappointment? Or do you want to set something that's more attainable, but maybe doesn't exactly get you into the position that you want to be in? And that's a balance that each person individually has to set for themselves. It's interesting that only 4% of our respondents said that actually creating a budget, which would help you make that determination, was a resolution for them in the new year, right? So when setting financial resolutions, I do think there has to be kind of an honest conversation with yourself, to your point, Amy, about what is realistic for me, and then what is the way to get there with the least amount of friction. And, you know, I think of friction in terms of personal finance, in a number of ways. It can be, you know, what can I do to make sure I don't have to manually be making that savings transfer after every paycheck, because sometimes I'll forget, or sometimes I'll just think I don't need to this month. So how do you reduce that friction? Obviously automating those types of things is a great way to do that. But then also, how do you think about setbacks that you might face financially, an unexpected expense, maybe your car breaks down, or you have a pipe burst in your house, or you need to make an emergency trip to see family. How do you think of that as just a barrier to overcome versus a huge setback that's going to erase your ability to hit your financial goals for the new year, right? So we can think of financial resolutions also as not necessarily something that's static, but can be dynamic and shift based on events that take place over the course of the year.
Let's talk about the year, because your article said 4 in 10 Americans feel confident that they'll hit their 2026 financial goals. Is that different in past years? Are people feeling a little bit more down on their finances in past years, or is 4 in 10 better?
No, that's about where things have been in previous iterations of our survey. I believe when we ran it in 2024 for the 2025 year, it was around 37% of folks were confident they'd hit their resolution. And then that same number, about a quarter, actually said that they were able to keep their resolution. So it's pretty consistent year over year. And, you know, there's a margin of error always with these types of surveys. So I don't read too much into those relatively small fluctuations. I'm more interested in seeing year over year if the top resolutions change, because I think that provides some insight into how the consumer is feeling. And for the last 2 years, debt has been that, paying off debt has been that number one goal. And I think it's a reflection of folks wanting to create as much stability in their personal financial lives as possible, given how much uncertainty there is generally.
When people make a resolution to pay off debt, do they also make a resolution to, I don't know, stop using their credit card so they don't create more debt?
So it depends on the generation. Credit, paying off credit card debt, that was overall the top debt repayment target for respondents in our survey. Younger adults, so Gen Z and millennials, they were more likely to focus on student loan debt, credit card debt, and actually buy now, pay later debt, which is a little bit interesting. Whereas older generations were more likely to put paying off their mortgage higher, followed by credit card debt. You know, my advice would be not to look at credit card usage as a kind of black and white decision. I should or shouldn't use a credit card. Our personal finance, credit card experts at Motley Fool Money will tell you that if you have a lot of credit card debt, getting a balance transfer card, a card that allows you to take your balance on that high debt card and put it onto a card that has a 0% APR for a number of months is a great strategy. Obviously, you need to be mindful about additional credit card spending while you're paying off that debt. And of course, credit cards, if you use them responsibly, can be a great tool to earn cash back and rewards that can actually help lower your monthly bill, or can go towards that savings goal, like maybe a vacation.
Vacation, yeah.
Yeah.
We have been talking about financial New Year's resolutions with research director for the Motley Fool and Motley Fool Money, Jack Caparel. Thank you so much for your time today, Jack.
Thanks for having me, Amy. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. And this is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us today, listeners. I'm Amy Jurevich.